Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. The windy and rainy Mojave of this winter time becoming springtime here and there. Yesterday afternoon, I was having a martini on the patio of a little French restaurant I like down in Palm Desert, and it was a pleasant and beautiful 68 degrees. The sun was shining. People walking El Paseo in crisp clothing made for the leisure life. Lots of cheerful little well-groomed dogs getting their walks, and meanwhile, churning atop the mountains rising up so dramatically to the west, another winter storm was at work, right above us all. I looked at the National Weather Service reports, and there was heavy rain and street flooding on the Inland Empire side of the mountains. More wind lashing the California coastline, more snow piling up in the Sierra, the mountains between Death Valley and Las Vegas piling up on Charleston Peak. That is one of the strange and beautiful bounties you win from calling these deserts home, watching the rain shadow effect at work. Seeing the blue-black clouds tied up at the peaks rising straight up above you. And sure enough, on the ride back up the mountains to the Mojave High Desert, the temperature dropped 25 degrees and rain lashed the highway. And I could not have had a more dramatic change in scenery had I bought a plane ticket. Especially considering how poorly the passenger planes are doing lately. Doors falling out, wheels falling off, engines on fire, just a complete crumbling of a transportation system. And for all that, arriving 2 hours early and increased checked luggage prices, crazy people on the planes. You go through all that and you end up back at the same airport and have to be interviewed by the National Transportation Safety Board. You might as well just stay at home. So we take it for granted in the high desert, or really any desert ringed by mountains, we take it for granted that we can see the geography around us better than any satellite view on the computer map. I can be writing all day from my perch here at home, like Flocko the owl in the sad cage he thankfully escaped, but meanwhile I'm keeping an eye on the weather, on the clouds and sandstorms and rain showers. because I can see it all. Some 600 square miles all around, from the peaks of the National Park to San Gorgonio to the Cleghorn Lakes Wilderness beyond Wonder Valley. If it's raining here, I know where it's not raining, and that's where I'll go for the afternoon walk in the mountains, somewhere around here, within a half-hour drive or so. Now, I don't mind the rain. I like to walk in the rain sometimes. And the dog doesn't mind the rain. But when it's cold and windy, I'll take some sunshine if I can get it. Years ago, I was driving around with somebody. Was it Brendan Mays? We were coming down from Yucca Mesa, driving south. The whole western side of the national park unfolding before us with the sun and shadow and jagged geography doing their tricks of perception and light. And Brendan says, it must have been Brendan. Brendan says, did gravity stop working out here? We're level and it feels like we're plunging into the abyss. Something like that. It was a long time ago. We had been up on the mesa looking at this dilapidated Biltmore shack he had some idea about turning into a Zen retreat for Buddhists, you know? But there was really no way to completely hide the auto junkyard on the 5 acres next door. This is Desert Oracle Radio, and I'm your host, Ken Lane. The soundscapes you hear on this program are written and performed and recorded at an unknown location by our own Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Sometime last summer, I received a postcard from a Pacific Crest trail hiker who'd passed through Idlewild, where she picked up a postcard with a strange, hairy figure on the picture side. It was a Sasquatch, better known around here as the mountain monster Tokwitz. Although, to be honest, it was really somebody in a Wookiee costume posing in front of a fake traffic sign tacked to a pine tree. A fake yellow warning sign announcing a Bigfoot crossing. Chantel? I still don't know how to pronounce the name exactly, or at all. Maybe I'm supposed to stress the last E, maybe not. Chantel had sent this postcard. I don't know when, really. Some weeks, maybe months, before I managed to drive down to the Joshua Tree post office and pick it up. The post office box lobby that inexplicably closes at 5 p.m. on weekdays because apparently Joshua Tree exists in some alternate world outside the normal U.S. Postal Service reality. Where the whole point of having a post office box is that you can pick up your mail regardless of the time of day. I used to like picking up my mail on Sunday night, rolling into town just as most of the tourists were rolling out on their way back to wherever they come from. That used to be a good time to get the mail and stop at a bar or one of our 7 or 8 or 12 Mexican restaurants, because there's nothing else to eat around here besides the poison slop tossed through the drive-thru window at the High Desert's 24 third-tier fast food franchises. And the handful of tourist eateries all keep bizarre hours like 2 p.m. to 4:45 p.m. on alternate Mondays and Thursdays. Anyway, it's a struggle around here to just pick up your mail. Because, I'm told, of the vortex. Now, I'm not sure what a vortex is, but it apparently affects a human's ability to run a normal business or government office like everywhere else in America. Anyway, after many mysterious months, Desert Oracle received a second postcard from Chantel. And it goes like this. Dear Desert Oracle, greetings from mile 2,466 on the Pacific Crest Trail. I skipped the Sierra section this year, a record snow year, but Northern California was beautiful and burnt. Oregon was flatter than the rest of the PCT, and Washington is gorgeous when it's not all fog. And it's signed, Chantel.
Desert Oracle Radio.
Oh, and there's a postscript, a PS at the bottom. It's sort of obscured by the Postal Service barcode on the bottom. Only about 200 miles left until the Canadian border. I'll get back to the Sierra next year. Thanks again for keeping me entertained on the trail, Chantel. Well, thanks for keeping us posted. Thanks for this picture postcard from Leavenworth, Washington. The picture shows a group of women in what looks like traditional Central European or maybe Scandinavian folk costume, dresses of red with white aprons, white stockings, black shoes, all circling around a great maypole and winding the long, colorful ribbons that they learned to expertly twine around the pole. I wonder if this still happens in Leavenworth, Washington, or if anti-pagan fanatics have stomped it out. The way they have stomped out school Halloween festivals and replaced them with so-called harvest festivals. Robbed of humanity's ancestral spirits and strange, spooky vibes. The caption says, "The Maypole be ribboned at Mayfest in Leavenworth, Washington. Celebration of the arrival of spring and the budding of birch trees brings music, a grand march, and art to the park. The second Saturday and Sunday of May, Leavenworth's Junior Miss reigns over the festivities. So I just looked it up. It's Alpine folk costume is in the European Alps. And Leavenworth is apparently a Bavarian-style village. I've never been there. Bavarian, not barbarian. And the Mayfest is still happening, as it has since 1971. Listen to this. It's right on the town's website. They don't even hide it, like in The Wicker Man. Traditional Mayfest celebration, May 10 through 12, 20 and 24. We've been doing Mayfest right since 1971. This weekend will fill your entertainment card right up with maypole dancing, Bavarian music, our annual Festzug Grand March, where town folk dress in their Bavarian best to welcome you to town, and so much more. We love our Bavarian. We love our Bavarian traditions, and this weekend is full of them. Well, that sounds pretty good. There's a whole month of Mayfest events in May. Every weekend, only 2.5 hours east of Seattle by Scenic Mountain Highway. Maybe I'll go this year. They've got beer gardens and beer halls and European bakeries and a big cider house. All kinds of Italian and German and Swiss restaurants. And only one Mexican restaurant, according to the list on the town's website. Incredible! Maybe somebody will take me up there for the weekend. And if it's anything like the Swiss Alps, maybe Leavenworth has its own Shagata. Those are the shaggy-haired, very tall mountain monsters, something like what you see on the Matterhorn ride at Disneyland. Or what you might see out by the east gate of the Marine Base in 29 Palms, where the Yucca Man is said to wander on certain nights. But it is not time to depart the desert just yet. Not when the mild springtime and many wildflowers are so close at hand. Now, you might know this radio show as the Voice of the Desert, which was originally the motto of the little magazine I started a decade ago, Desert Oracle. The idea then and now is that a publication or local radio program should be the voice of the area. The way our local station in Joshua Tree is the voice of the Morongo Basin. Or how a TV station in Bristol, Tennessee might be the voice of Tri-State Appalachia, etc. It all comes from Latin, vox populi. Vox populi, the voice of the people. Vox clamantis in deserto, a voice crying out in the wilderness, that comes from the book of Isaiah. That's the Latin translation of the phrase, anyway. I've always liked that one. But But I like any kind of motto best when it has several meanings, layers of meaning. So I was thinking about the coyotes and how the coyote song is the true voice of the desert. So if you look in the magazine, the periodical, there's a howling coyote on page 2 of every issue. Next to the slogan, the voice of the desert. All right, who cares, you might be saying. Why won't you tell me about make-believe alien surgeons operating on my foot at night for some reason? Who cares indeed? I don't really care who cares, which is the opposite sentiment of the classic Tom T. Hall song I remember from childhood, where weird old Uncle Tom T. is telling his nephew or niece or some little child he knows that even though life can be hard, even though parents demand ridiculous things from little children who really don't want to go to a restaurant and sit in a high chair while the adults drink margaritas and eat fajitas again, Tom T. Hall wanted the kids to know that old Uncle Tom T. cares. I think the song is called I Care, which is better than it sounds, I promise. It's on his album of folk tales for kids, including the wonderful Mysterious Fox of Fox Hollow. But anyway, another use of Voice of the Desert comes in the title of a 1956 book by Joseph Wood Crutch, The Voice of the Desert. I've got an old hardcover, and it even has the color slip jacket of a saguaro and silhouette before a multi-layered Sonoran sunset. And I've been reading some of this book lately and figured I'd read a few lines on the show tonight. Because even though it's from 3/4 of a century ago, it still describes the desert we know and love today. To find an answer to the more interesting question, to find an animal which refuses to live anywhere except in the desert, to find one which is, in his own peculiar way, very demanding, even though what he demands is what most animals would not have at any price, I do not have to go far. Indeed, I do not have to go any further from my doorstep than I went to find the spadefoot toad. And it happens that I intruded upon this perfect desert dweller at a dramatic moment only a few days ago, when I stepped out in the early morning and was startled by a large chicken-sized bird. If you can still call him a bird, who was dashing madly back and forth at right angles to my line of vision. His headlong plunges were so like those of a frenzied hen who seems to be rushing madly in all directions at once that for a moment I thought I'd frightened him out of his wits. As it turned out, he was merely too busy at the moment to acknowledge my presence. As to what he was, that question could be answered by even the most unobservant person who has ever driven a highway in the desert. He was one of the commonest, as well as perhaps the most remarkable of all desert birds. Namely, a roadrunner. Nearly 2 feet of relentless energy from the tip of his wicked bill to the tip of his long, expressive tail, which may trail the ground when he is calm or depressed, or be raised almost as straight up as the tail of a confident cat when he is happily angry, as indeed he seems to be a good part of the time. From Amboy to Zizix, and across these Mojave Desert lands, this has been Desert Oracle Radio. If you are in or around the Mojave High Desert, you can tune in at 10 p.m. Friday nights on our local station up here, Z107.7 FM. Or otherwise, just get it off the podcast player for as long as that system remains semi-functional. Even better and much appreciated by the entire Desert Oracle staff. That's me. Subscribe to our Patreon page, patreon.com/Desert Oracle, and you'll get some early episodes and bonus live shows and other such content. I'll even send you a Desert Oracle postcard from Joshua Tree if you let me know your mailing address when you sign up. As mentioned, Red, Blue, Black, Silver made the soundscapes you heard tonight. And you can find more of his work at Bandcamp, although our closing theme, which I still use now and then, that's by Pierre Langer, who is no relation to Red, Blue, Black, Silver. I mean, I don't really know. Maybe they're cousins. But you can find more of his music at Bandcamp. You know, the weeks and months go by, the seasons of our lives, and I never seem to get to this list of corrections and clarifications I'm supposed to make. But let's get to this one. When I mentioned the Joe Ely record, The Road Goes On Forever, I did not separately credit the songwriter, the great Robert Earl Keane. Joe Ely's version sold pretty well for a genre of music that never sold a ton of copies, and that's how it became Robert Earl Keane's signature song. I mostly say this so people who spend too much time being nitpicky about music can't get you down. My Way is a Frank Sinatra song, even though Paul Anka wrote it. Real heads know Shel Silverstein wrote Johnny Cash's A Boy Named Sue. Get outside and enjoy the good weather. And good night. From the voice of the desert.